Hear now the second lesson found in the first chapter of the Gospel according to Luke, beginning at verse 5. In the days of King Herod of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly order of Abijah. His wife was a descendant of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. Both of them were righteous before God, living blamelessly according to all the commandments and regulations of the Lord. But they had no children, because Elizabeth was barren, and both were getting on in years. Verse 24, after those days, his wife Elizabeth conceived, and for 5 months she remained in seclusion. She said, "This is what the Lord has done for me when he looked favorably on me and took away the disgrace I have endured among my people." Verse 39, in those days, Mary set out and went with haste to a Judean town in the hill country, where she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the child leaped in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit and exclaimed with a loud cry, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And why has this happened to me that the mother of my Lord comes to me? For as soon as I heard the sound of your greeting, the child in my womb leaped for joy. And blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord." Verse 57. Now the time came for Elizabeth to give birth, and she bore a son. Her neighbors and relatives heard that the Lord had shown his great mercy to her, and they rejoiced with her. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him Zechariah after his father. But his mother said, "No, he is to be called John." They said to her, "None of your relatives has this name." Then they began motioning to his father to find out what name he wanted to give him. He asked for a writing tablet and wrote, "His name is John." And all of them were amazed. Immediately his mouth was opened and his tongue freed, and he began to speak, praising God. Fear came over all their neighbors, and all these things were talked about throughout the entire hill country of Judea. All who heard them pondered them and said, "What then will this child become? For indeed, the hand of the Lord was with him." The word of the Lord. Elizabeth is one of my very favorite people. And not just because, as Luke puts it here, she was righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and regulations of the Lord blameless. That's noteworthy, but that's not why I admire her. I look up to Elizabeth because Elizabeth didn't insist on being looked up to. She was a celebrity in her hometown. Everyone was looking up to Elizabeth. But when Mary showed up at her door, Elizabeth promptly put her fame aside so she could minister to Mary. You see, what was a source of untainted joy to Elizabeth was a source of unwanted anxiety to Mary. Both women were pregnant unexpectedly. Elizabeth, because she was old and barren. Mary, because she was young and unmarried. To Elizabeth, pregnancy meant the end of her shame. Because back then it was humiliating for a woman to go through life without children. To Mary, pregnancy meant the beginning of her shame, because everyone knew that Mary was unmarried when that baby was conceived in her womb. Oh yes, she knew that her baby was conceived by the Holy Spirit, but how do you explain something like that to all those self-righteous busybodies who like nothing better than a juicy bit of scandal? "What's that you say, Mary? Your baby is conceived by the Holy Spirit? Give us a break." And so Mary fled from her gossiping neighbors to seek refuge with Elizabeth. I'll go tell Elizabeth. She'll understand. And understand she did. Elizabeth promptly deferred her own happiness so she could hold Mary's hand. Now, a lesser person might have been very envious of Mary because, after all, Mary was carrying the long-awaited Messiah. But, says our text, Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is a generous, caring spirit. So Elizabeth, filled with this caring spirit, blesses Mary, affirms that she is in fact carrying that one who will be Israel's Lord, and reinforces Mary's faith in God's promise. Blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her from the Lord. There is not a shred of envy in Elizabeth. Only delight that Mary was given a greater mission from God than she herself was. Now, fast forward 30 years, if you will, please, to watch Elizabeth's son John ponder Mary's son Jesus. More and more people are leaving John now, and they are flocking to Jesus, and John's supporters are upset. Rabbi, the one who was with you across the Jordan, to whom you testified, here he is baptizing, and all are going to him. That's John 3:26. Now, what they didn't say, but clearly implied, was, now listen, John, you were here first. You're number one. What right does this Jesus have to invade your turf? To which John replied, you yourself are my witnesses that I said I am not the Messiah, but I have been sent ahead of him. He must increase, but I must decrease. Now, where did John learn such humility? From his mother, of course. Elizabeth didn't have to be number one, nor did her son John, nor, for that matter, did Jesus. Satan, you may recall, offered Jesus all the kingdoms of the world. Jesus, you can be number one if you'll just fall down and worship me. And Jesus flatly rejected the offer. Months later, after feeding the 5,000, the crowd attempted to make Jesus king by acclamation. Jesus slipped through the crowd and went off on a private retreat. On Palm Sunday, the crowds at Jerusalem hailed him as their Messiah. He entered the city, got down off the donkey, and promptly left town. A week later, Pilate gave him one last chance. Are you the king of the Jews? He asked. To which Jesus replied, my kingdom is not from this world. If anyone could have taken the gold medal in every category of life, it was Jesus. But, Paul writes, he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness, and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Jesus did not have to be number one. Jesus left his glory behind so he could stoop and put his arms, his saving arms, around the world. Jesus did not have to be number one. Do you? At the office party last week, when a colleague was bragging about some recent achievement, did you have to top his story? When a friend bragged about their children, could you not wait to take out your own pictures? When a neighbor bought a bigger house or a more luxurious car or the latest cyber toy for adults, did you have to go them one better? Have to be number one? The film Amadeus illustrates the destructive power of envy. Antonio Salieri was the competent, though not brilliant, conductor of the Vienna Opera when Mozart suddenly bursts on the scene with his superb compositions, but also his childish pranks. Salieri is madly jealous, and he does everything he can to discredit his young competitor. One evening, he visits Mozart's apartment, and he spots a manuscript containing a full orchestral score without a single erasure anywhere on it. When he learns that this was his first draft, that Mozart creates complete scores without a single correction or error, Salieri is just beside himself. He cannot believe that God would shower such genius on a playboy. When he, Salieri, has lived such a disciplined life and has so little to show for it. In any other era, Salieri would be highly honored, but as long as Mozart lives, Salieri will always play second violin, and that's something he just cannot stand. The film goes on to suggest that it was Salieri who orchestrated the events that killed Mozart at the age of 35. Whether that is true or not, such is the destructive power of envy. Now let me show you the other side of the coin. When I interviewed with a pastor nominating committee in my former church in 1986, I learned that the previous pastor, Dr. Wilson Kilgore, had retired and was living right there in the neighborhood. So, among other questions, I asked the committee, what will be Dr. Kilgore's attitude toward me if I were to come to be the pastor? Well, they didn't understand what I was talking about. Had to ask the question two or three times. Finally, they went to Dr. Kilgore, and they said, this man is asking us this question. Oh, Wilson said, I know exactly what he's asking. You go back and tell Tom that I will not interfere in any way in his ministry if he decides to come to this church. If people come to me asking me to do weddings and funerals, I will tell them gently, I am no longer your pastor, and I will refer them to Tom. He was absolutely true to his word. When I asked Wilson if I could share that story, he gave me permission, and then he suggested that I add this parable to it. He said, when you climb out of a swimming pool, the water closes in behind you, and the pool doesn't even know you were there. Well, that's stretching a little bit as far as Wilson Kilgore was concerned, because he had been the pastor of that church for over 14 years, and believe me, the ripples were still there, and that was wonderful. But you see, when he retired, he didn't have to be number one. And when Elizabeth put her arms around Mary, she showed that she didn't have to be number one either. And then after giving birth to her son John, who would become John the Baptist, she fades from the biblical story, and we never hear of her again. That just may be the mark of true greatness. Greatness is not how big a splash you make in the pool, but rather how you help others stay afloat. And then when you have finished your job, to climb out and make room for others. By that criterion, how great are you?